Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 15th, 2013. I'm Carrie Klein, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS annual meeting in Boston. If you spend any time on the internet, you're familiar with social media. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, Pinterest, Reddit, and the list goes on. For a long time, these networks were considered the playthings of young people for chatting and making friends, but more and more, these networks are being used by professional organizations and, yes, even scientists for disseminating news and important information. After a session about science and social media, Meghna Sachdev and I caught up with a PhD student who advocates for the benefits of a strong online presence.
My name is Christy Wilcox. I am a science writer / scientist / blogger / social media guru, apparently. I love fish, and I study venomous fish. Very specifically, I study their venoms, and I'm very interested in the evolution of the protein toxin that is present in the venomous spines of the scorpioniform fishes, which is your stonefish, scorpionfish, lionfish, that whole lineage. And so I am looking at that protein toxin across the lineage and in different species and just trying to understand it a bit more. It's something we've known about for a long time, but because it's an extremely labile protein, we don't really have a whole lot of information as to what's important for how it acts or even a structure, for example. And so I'm trying to take from a genetic approach, looking at the evolution of the protein toxin.
So what can scientists and researchers get out of social media?
I think they can get a lot of things out of social media. I think the major thing out of social media is networking, whether it's with other scientists, with science journalists that might publicize their research, or with just lay public that's actually interested in what they do. Networking is huge on social media. You can build a lot of people that'll, you know, show up for your coastal cleanups or, you know, talk about your paper.
And what about people who say that, you know, social media is silly or frivolous? I mean, what sort of tangible benefits can you point to that people might be able to get?
So as for tangible benefits, there's a lot of different ones. Like I mentioned, these networks, they might seem superficial, but they're really not. I mean, there's been studies that have shown that social media can increase funding efforts by 40%, for example. Things like that, where it's really going to help you do what you're already trying to do, get more people interested in what you're trying to get people interested in. And you can also use it as your own sort of filtered source of news and information. I use my Twitter feeds to find out all of the coolest science research, and even from funding agencies. There's a lot of funding agencies that are on Twitter, and they tweet about sort of how to get their grants and how to get their stuff. And so you can really use it a lot of different ways.
And how would you say that social media has helped you in your career, either in terms of this research or in other ways?
Well, in many ways, social media has definitely helped my career. Just being more well-known tends to help, even from a scientist perspective, even though I don't blog very often about my own research or about what I do. When I'm at professional meetings, more people know who I am. They're more likely to show up to my talk, even if it's not about anything related to my blog. And so that's a big benefit. And then I've met collaborators online. I've had discussions with people online about my research that I met entirely online. And I mean, one of my PhD collaborators is from Australia, for example, and I've never met him in person, but he actually commented on my blog and how much he liked my blog. And I went back and was like, oh my God, it's you. I know who you are. I've read all your papers. Can I please talk to you about this? You can definitely build those networks, very meaningful networks from social media.
You mentioned a statistic, something about highly tweeted papers were cited 11% or 11 times, something like that. Can you repeat what that statistic was?
Sure. The statistic was that the highly tweeted papers are 11 times more likely to be highly cited.
And how do you define highly tweeted? And can a scientist actually play a role in whether or not that happens?
So this was defined in the paper method section, but it was talking about, I believe highly tweeted was more than 10 tweets about it. I'm not entirely sure. But basically they set a number and said if it got more than 10 tweets to this article or more than whatever tweets to this article, that's highly tweeted. And then same idea with citations. They said if it gets more than this many citations, it's highly cited. And they just sort of drew a very simple correlation between the two. That isn't to say that the tweets caused all of those citations. There's probably a little bit of feedback because really popular papers are probably going to be tweeted more and vice versa. But I would definitely guess that there is both sides working on that, that the tweets are leading to more citations and the fact that the papers are great is leading to more tweets.
And so how could a scientist be more highly tweeted in the first place? Is that
by perhaps having a stronger online presence to begin with, or telling all their friends to tweet about them?
Absolutely. Having an online presence to begin with, if you don't tweet, you're not going to be as likely to be tweeted. And certainly if you have that big network, if you have those followers on Twitter, then when you tweet, it's going to go out to a bigger audience. And I remember, I think it was Al Dove who said basically every time he tweets, it's like talking to an auditorium full of people because he has, you know, 1,000 Twitter followers. And so that sort of idea of if you tweet something, it will potentially get retweeted.
Great. And do you think you can convey any actual meaningful science through avenues like Facebook and Twitter where things just are necessarily shortened and simplified?
Absolutely. I would say Neil deGrasse Tyson is a great example of how you can turn real science into 140 characters. And he tweets the greatest little snippets of science talking about, you know, how the stars in some particular movie are inaccurate. Or my favorite one, I think, is he tweeted something about how Rudolph's nose is shiny according to the song, which means it reflects light rather than emitting it, therefore would be completely useless in fog.
That's great. And what about, you know, there's so much out there. There's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. There's just so much. And it can be kind of overwhelming. I mean, what would your advice be to scientists who are starting out and just find all of this kind of, you know, difficult to handle?
I would say start small and start with what most interests you. So if you're interested in, say, getting a lot of links and really getting viral content out there, try Twitter. If you're interested in building a really social network where you're talking to people and having conversations and discussions, try Facebook and really sort of take your time with it and play.
If you had to pick one, is there, you know, is there one social media outlet that you think, yes, every scientist should be on this?
Oh, just one? It's a toss-up between Facebook and Twitter for me, actually, and Google. As a profile, it really depends on what you're going for. But I mean, Twitter is where you're going to get viral content. Facebook's where you're going to have a legit audience that's going to come back for more every time. And then Google's where you're going to get searched and found. And if you're trying to, you know, say, have your papers up on your website, having it well indexed in Google is going to be a huge benefit for you.
Great. And what about, you know, I think when it comes to social media, sometimes it can be a bit of a time suck and you kind of get pull down the rabbit hole. What would you say, how can you stay productive while still engaging with social media?
Well, two ways that I do. One, use, quote, useless time for social media. So if you're waiting 10 minutes for a bus and you have a smartphone, you can be tweeting. If you're driving in a car with someone, you know, they can be on while you drive or something like that. I use a lot of useless time walking from place A to place B. The other thing is, you don't have to do it alone. So I have my lab on Facebook and Twitter and things, and I rely on them to also post content and also be active so that it's not entirely me driving our lab's social media presence. It's the whole lab.
And what should the science community do as a whole to essentially try and encourage everybody to engage on social media? I mean, is there anything you'd like to see the science community do better?
Absolutely. The number one thing I would like the science community to do is to put social media and science communication training at the top of their list for graduate training. I want to see training programs in every single science grad program saying, this is how you talk to a journalist, this is how you use Twitter effectively, this is how you do these different things. And I think that training is vital to the future of science communication.
And we sort of talked about networking and we've talked about how it kind of gets the word out there. But is there any way you can turn sort of popularity on social media into profit, basically?
Certainly, I do. I would say one thing is talking about using those networks like for fundraising. SciFund is a good example of that in terms of getting actual literal research money for your projects based on your social networks. You can also get paid to write things. You can get paid to do these things, paid speaking engagements. I mean, I wouldn't say go into it for the pay, but it's definitely a benefit and it's definitely something that will happen as you become more popular and more well-known.
Wonderful. Christy, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
That was Christy Wilcox talking about science and social media. Thanks for listening to the Science Podcast. I'm Carrie Klein. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, or the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.